This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is Friday, January 3rd, 2020. So welcome to the new decade. Happy New Year to everyone. I'm kicking it off right. I feel like I'm kicking the new year off right with a first. And if you know me, you know that there aren't a lot of things that I haven't done before. But today's show is one of them. And that is, I'm going to be interviewing someone named Tristan, which I'm going into my eighth year of the show and I have never done. It's kind of exciting. It just because it's like not a common name. And so I love it when I meet other Tristans. We're just going to talk about queer family today. Let me tell you about my guest. Tristan Rees is a Portland-based trans educator who works on transgender fertility issues specifically and LGBTQ plus family issues more broadly. His writings on the subject have been featured in HuffPost, and he's been interviewed by CNN, People Magazine, The Washington Post, Vice, and dozens of other journalistic outlets across the globe. His trans family building story was heard by millions when he performed on the Moth Radio Hour. As director of family formation at Family Equality, which is the nation's leading nonprofit dedicated to supporting LGBTQ plus families and those who wish to form them, Tristan has trained over 1,000 family building professionals utilizing the cultural competency online ecosystem he built from scratch. Family Equality Council just published a comprehensive study on family building for the LGBTQ plus community, showing that more LGBTQ plus millennials plan to have families than ever before. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Tristan.
I'm really excited to be here, Tristan. Oh, I'm going to get so much play out of that.
Yeah, let's just keep calling each other by our names.
Oh, I will.
Okay, good. So you have an amazing story. You're sort of a professional LGBTQ plus person, you know, the pro, because you've worked.
That's right.
In gay for pay, you've worked in that world for so many years. But we're going to talk a little more personally about your family. Maybe you will start. So you fell in love. Should we start with falling in love? I guess
always.
That's how you start with a family, right?
Well, in some cases,
sure. In some cases not. No judgment.
That's right. I mean, we could start with falling in love. The year was 2010.
Okay.
And I was living in LA. I was actually working at the National LGBTQ Task Force at the time. So I was like living my childhood dream of being a professional pissed off queer. That's a real job. And I really got to do it.
That is a real job in the nonprofit industrial complex.
That's right. And I really loved it. I mean, I got to travel the country and work in these mostly pretty small communities where they were facing really vicious anti-LGBT attacks at the ballot box. And I got to teach queer people in like Bowling Green, Ohio and Kalamazoo, Michigan, how to talk to strangers, how to talk to voters about their story and about LGBTQ issues and about marriage and about discrimination, about being trans. It was amazing. I mean, I really, really loved it. And for me, the one thing that was missing really was, a person to be with or people to be with. I mean, for me, it was just like, that's something I really wanted. And it just kept not happening. And for a long time, I just thought it was because I'm trans. you know, in 2010, it doesn't seem like it's so long ago, but it's also like a really long time ago in terms of the trans movement.
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't even say you were, that trans wasn't even like a category on any dating app or hookup app. That wasn't even a thing.
No. I mean, this is, So it was a long time ago. And I was just really worried. I didn't know many trans people who were like married or in love. Marriage, I wasn't interested in, but like really finding a person that was a decent person and was nice to you. I just hadn't seen it happen. And so I had sort of given up, but also I'm an internal optimist, so I hadn't exactly given up. And then one day I just like went to this trans brunch at my friend's house and literally like I walked to their house from my place in LA and like turned the corner and I saw, you know, this queer person walking across the street and they had like pink hair and a little black bandana and a nose ring and these like tall boots, you know? And I was just like, oh my God, where have you been? where have you been? I've been waiting for you, you know? He just felt very familiar to me. There was just something very cozy about him. So we met at this brunch, this trans brunch that we were both going to. He was the only non-trans person at the whole brunch. That's how we first met. It turns out that he actually had a boyfriend when we first met, which I learned later. But as I was in my early mid-20s, I was not deterred by that. And I continued to flirt mercilessly with him over the course of many weeks. And there was one particularly notable night when we had had drinks with friends, all of us on the like rooftop bar of the Standard in downtown LA. And I had just been, I mean, just shamelessly flirting with him. Just, I mean, looking back, it's embarrassing. but then I left and I'm, you know, going back home and I get this text from him that says, you know, I sense that there is an attraction between the two of us, from you to me, and I am very flattered, but I'm in a relationship, and I owe it to him to let that relationship play its course. So as much as I love the attention, respectfully, I ask that you stop flirting with me and just commit to being my friend.
Wow. I wish more people would be as direct and clear as that, right? People have trouble saying no. Right. This is a thing universally, right? People have trouble saying no. And so they hedge it or they're like, maybe later, or this is fun, but, and they don't actually tell you what's going on. I really love clarity like that.
For me, that was like, don't you know this makes me like you even
twice as much?
Twice as much. Someone who is like an emotionally mature person. And plus for me, I really was like, oh, the person with integrity, you know, the person who will not break a vow to their current partner for you will not break a vow with you for someone else.
Right.
And he was 25. He's a 25-year-old.
Oh, that's really mature for a 25-year-old.
Gay boy living in Koreatown, LA. Yeah. So at that point, I was like, oh my God, this is who you marry. You know?
Yeah.
So immediately I was like, I'm so sorry if I made you uncomfortable. I 100% respect your relationship. I am stoked to be your friend. Please accept my apologies. I'll dial it back. And I did. And then I just waited. And then
I just waited.
And I was friend. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then, you know, Facebook told me that his relationship status went from in a relationship to single. And I picked up the phone as soon as that came into my feed. I called him right away. And I just said, hey, what are you doing? Do you want to have dinner tonight? And he said, yeah. And, you know, I think probably from our second date, we haven't spent a night apart in 9 years.
Wow. That is amazing. Well, I also love that your relationship started with no. God, it's not something that you hear from people. Like, you know, one of us was interested and the other one was like, no. But then all of a sudden it like came back around. I love that sweet story. Okay, we have to take a break, but I want you to answer just one more question quickly, which is when you got together and you decided, okay, we're going to commit to each other. We're going to be partners. Were you also talking about or thinking about having kids?
Not at all.
No. Neither of you.
No, not at all.
Okay, so now you do have three kids. So there's some shift that we've got to talk about, like after the commercial break. But okay, sure. So you're not someone who grew up and thought, I really want kids. I really want to be a parent.
Not at all.
Was never in the mix.
No, and in fact, I have a huge Peter Pan tattoo on my arm because that was always my commitment to myself, was to not grow up, to not get stuck in those sort of monogamous responsibility, mortgage, car, those things I just never, never, never wanted. And then I met Biff, and just everything I thought I wanted for myself just came crashing down around me. And I got the opportunity really to build something new from scratch.
That's where the story gets pretty good. And we are going to talk about that after this commercial break. So I want to shout out my sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. I love you guys. You thought they had good deals going on in December because it was the holidays, but they still have more deals, people. So listen to this commercial. It's brand new. And when we come back, more with Tristan. Is that okay, Tristan?
Yep, sounds good.
You were supposed to say yes, Tristan.
Yes, Tristan.
Okay, we'll be back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Happy New Year from the Pleasure Chest. January is full of amazing pleasure ed classes, including in Los Angeles, January 22nd, Big Sex, Body Positive Sex to Empower Your Sex Life with Elle Chase. January 25th, Asian Femmes Speak Out, a panel on sexuality and stereotypes. In New York, on the Upper East Side, January 15th is a squirt shop, and January 29th is a class on pegging. At the West Village location, January 16th is Asking For It. In Chicago, January 8th, it's Suck It, Lick It, Love It, all about oral sex, and January 15th, BDSM Basics. Plus, from January 14th to the 20th, there's an early bird Valentine's Day special. You can get 20% off most popular couples' toys. Some exclusions apply, online only. Beginning January 17th through February 11th, purchase any WeVibe and get a WeVibe toy bag gift in-store and online. As always, go to pleasurechest.com for these deals, to find out about events, and to get yourself something special while you're there. Hey everyone, as Instagram deletes porn star accounts, YouTube and Facebook censor content, dating apps are full of bots. We've talked about all this on the show, and it's becoming more and more difficult for people to connect, especially intimately, online. MyGirlFund.com allows members to form virtual relationships with sexy, amazing women. On MyGirlFund.com, you can meet, message, share photos and videos, and cam with women in private. If you know me, you know that two of my passions are people experiencing pleasure in diverse and shame-free ways, and folks getting paid fairly for their labor. It's very difficult for women to get paid for virtual adult work without risking personal exposure. Many women are willing to do dirty chat and/or share nude content for money, but safe and discreet platforms are rare. My Girl Fund allows its female members to control their exposure. They connect with who they want to connect with, control how they want to interact, and decide what they want to charge for these interactions. My Girl Fund has been around since 2009, providing space for people to have intimate interactions that they want. Sign up now at mygirlfund.com and get ready to meet and make connections with women in a safe, private, adult community.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
you're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, in addition to emailing me, you can also call me whenever you want. Tell me your deepest thoughts. Ask me questions. Ask for advice. Tell me what you thought of a show. You can call our 24-hour voicemail line, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I'm talking today with Tristan Reese, who right before the break told me that he never had thoughts about being a parent. And of course, spoiler alert, he now has three kids. So tell me the story of your two kids came to you, your two adopted kids. So tell me that story.
Yeah, I mean, really from the first few dates, I, you know, started having these sort of strange dreams about having a baby with Biff. And of course, I didn't want to tell him that because that's like, it's too much early on in a relationship. But they were very, very vivid and felt very real. And so that was really the sort of initial beginning of the thought process that like, oh my God, maybe I could be a parent. Like maybe I could have kids with someone. Yeah, and I had just sort of been thinking about that, and we had kind of joked about it a little bit, and I had said that, you know, if I was going to be a parent, that maybe my timeline would be like 5 years, and he was like, my timeline is like 10 years, or like maybe when I'm 40. And that had been the extent of our conversations about parenting. And about one year into our relationship, he got a phone call from the social worker who was supporting his younger sister. And she had two kids before she was 20 and had been having some difficulty supporting them. And she was in a relationship, an abusive relationship, and there was drugs involved and things we knew had been not great there. And then they went from not great to really bad. And so the social worker called us to let us know that the kids were going to be put in foster care. And, you know, we basically had like a 48-hour window during which we could go in, pick them up, and then they could stay with us for a little while, or they would go into the foster care system. And she was pretty sure that they wouldn't be able to be reunited with their birth mom after that. And so we had to make a decision within one day about whether, you know, what we were going to do, basically. And for me, I have a foster sister, and it wasn't even a thought. I was like, hell no, they're not going to the foster care system. We'll go get them. We will go get them. But we've already established that Biff is the more practical, emotionally intelligent one of the two of us. And he was sort of like, this is a terrible idea. You know, this is not how we want to become parents. You have no idea how dysfunctional my family is. And now we're going to be entrenched in them, like in this really complicated way forever. But it just wasn't a question for me. And so we got in the car. We bought some diapers on our way up to, you know, where his sister lives. And we went and we picked them up.
Wow. And at first, this was maybe going to be temporary.
Yeah, totally. We just didn't know, basically. And even like in the drive up, it's like a 2-hour drive. And, you know, he said to me, I don't know if this is going to be permanent or just for a little bit of time. But, you know, I need you to know that if we're committing to taking them now, you're committing to staying with me for the next 18 years. Like, we don't take them out of one dysfunctional situation and put them into another one. And we, you know, we had never talked about marriage. We just, like, we didn't want to rush into that. We'd only been together for a year. And I don't know if you've had this experience, but, like, a lot of queers in our life, they're, like, calling each other partner on, like, the second date. And then they're moving in together. And then they're getting married. They're just, like, way too fast. And then they break up. And then everything's in shambles.
Yes.
And so for us, we wanted it to enjoy every stage of, like, falling in love and then calling each other boyfriends and then being, you know, committed to each other, you know, sexually, and then moving in together. And then, you know, we just wanted to stretch it all out.
which life laughs at that, though. Life
yes,
is like,
sure
oh, that's
does.
The plan? Well, let me tell you what the plan's going to be.
Well, you guys thought you were mature and responsible and you're going to live drama-free lives, huh? Okay, cool. Yeah. So he was like, you know, you're coming to be with me, even if you're not in love with me anymore, even if it's not fun anymore. And I was like, yeah, yes, I understand. And I'm in.
Wow.
And so we went to pick them up, and that was 9 years ago.
So you have two adopted children. You have to weed your way through the foster care system, which anyone who knows anyone who's done that, no matter what state you're in, can be incredibly complex and take a lot of time and energy. It's not, you know, it's not easy. And then do you wake up one day and say, oh, let's have more.
Let's make our lives even more difficult.
Yeah, let's have more kids.
No. It was nothing like that. I mean, it was kind of like that, but it wasn't really like that. I mean, I will say, like, the sort of dreams that I had about a baby that wanted to be born into our family, those went away for many years as we got acclimated to raising a one-year-old and a three-year-old who'd been, you know, pretty severely neglected. And our whole lives were about them and getting them good. We moved to Portland. I got a new job that paid more money and had me traveling less. And Biff gets to stay home with the kids. And we just sort of started getting things figured out. And, you know, our adoption became final, and we became a forever family. And that was just a huge burden lifted for us. I know we had spent 5 years trying to figure out, you know, doing back and forth with visits and visitation, and which, you know, they often didn't show up for. And it's devastating to a three-year-old who thinks that he's going to see his mommy and she doesn't come, you know. And it was years of those types of things. And we had court dates, and, you know, as a queer person, going to court is just like even more terrifying than for anybody else. And social workers coming to investigate and look at our house and interview our doctors and our bosses and all of those things. Yeah. And it's funny. People often ask, like, well, why did you want to have a baby? And I always want to be like, well, why did you want to have a baby? Because, you know, people act like for queer people, it's somehow unique or different to want, you know, to want to have kids. And it's not. It's the same thing as everyone else talks about when they talk about it. I wanted to grow our family, and, you know, I happen, as a transgender man, I happen to be in the unique position of being able to literally grow our own family inside of my own body. And I had known, I mean, I've known dozens and now hundreds of trans men all over the world who've done this for at least 20 years, as I'm sure you know. And so I knew it was possible, and I thought it was something I wanted to do. I'm also just starting to get to that age where I'm like, how many life experiences do I really get? Like, I haven't swum with dolphins yet, so I'd like to do that. And also, like, what if I had a baby? You know, what would that experience be like? And I'm uniquely happen to be a man who can do that. And I thought, you know, I want to grow our family. I'm able to do it this way on our own, not in a big court system and investigations and stuff like that. I know it's medically advisable. So maybe that's something we could consider. And I brought it to Biff, and he was like, this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Because he's the practical one.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. So he was like, why would we ever start over from scratch? The kids are finally, like, out of diapers, in school, able to brush their own teeth and wipe their own butts, you know?
Right.
He's just like, you fool, basically.
So I'm wondering about the experience of being pregnant. My friend is pregnant right now. She's more than 6 months pregnant, and she's been documenting it. And she's talked about all these changes to her body, and she gets, like, down and dirty and nitty gritty about it. And she's having, you know, she's sort of one of the most grounded kind of embodied people I know to begin with. So of course, being pregnant for her has, you know, she's able to articulate all these small changes and all these sort of shifts and fluctuations. And she obviously has a changing relationship with her own body being pregnant. But I wondered if you had any sort of any dysphoria or any discomfort because you identify as a man.
Yeah, I mean, and there's two answers, right? There's my experience, and then there's what the data tells us. And I'm a huge nerd, and because this is, like, what I do for my work, I try to lean heavily on not just saying, here's what I experienced, because I don't want to universalize my experiences. But The data is super interesting. The data tells us that about a third of trans-identified people who get pregnant experience worse dysphoria throughout the process. You know, the sort of physical markers that some people associate with femininity, like, you know, breasts and hips and blah, 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 those get more pronounced, and then that does cause their dysphoria to get worse. About a third find that their dysphoria stays about the same. That was me. I have a complicated relationship with my body, but I don't experience a lot of dysphoria. Actually, I think because of how sex positive I've been throughout most of my life, I think I've had multiple really touch points throughout my adult life of feeling really embodied and really empowered in my body. And so I think that I'm pretty lucky in that way. And that's, my experience is about a third of other trans men or non-binary people who have babies feel. And then about a third actually find that dysphoria lessens or completely goes away when they're pregnant.
Fascinating.
I know, right? And when you ask them and when you look at the data, they say, yeah, I always hated, you know, having this kind of a chest. But now as it's getting bigger because it's getting ready to nourish a human, mm-hmm. you know, and like, yes, my hips are getting bigger because my baby's getting bigger, you know. And so there's a reclamation that happens in about a third of the experiences that we've studied that I think is really interesting and really cool.
Well, and I would think that there'd be like intense hormonal shifts. Don't most people have to go off T or all people have to go off T in order to get pregnant and carry to term?
Absolutely, yeah. Testosterone would be extremely bad for the developing fetus. And so, yes, you have to be off of testosterone in order to, if you plan to carry a pregnancy to term. You really should be off it. We think you should have around 3 sort of like normal cycles for you once you stop testosterone before you can try, but there's no evidence on that. We're just going based on what we think makes sense, extrapolating from other things. People can say things about the uterine lining and the thickening because of testosterone, and we're not totally sure. But the best recommendation is stop taking testosterone, wait until your cycle comes back. Wait until you have a few normal cycles and then try. And so, yeah, I was off of testosterone for the whole pregnancy and sometime before, and then, you know, for a little bit afterwards as well. And yeah, it's a roller coaster that I thought I could handle because I thought I am a mature adult, but it turns out that hormones are really complicated and hard. And so, yeah, it was a tough period for me.
I mean, anyone, like, I've been partnered with folks who've transitioned and hormones are real. You know, like, I am not a radical feminist, nor do I believe in essentialism. And yet hormones are real and they do real stuff to your body and to your mind.
And your personality and your patience. I mean, so many things. Yeah.
So just being pregnant shifts the hormones so much. And you sort of doubled that because you're like coming down off of the T, which must have shifted things. And then now you have these pregnancy hormones.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, I want to talk more about this, but we have to take another break.
Sounds good, Tristan.
So, Tristan, we're going to take a break, hear from our great sponsors who make this show possible. And then when we come back, we're going to talk more, Tristan. Okay?
Sounds great.
We'll be back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan, and it's time to listen up because we're going to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, porn. We all know that it's not hard to find porn on the internet, but finding porn that you like, that's a different story. Sometimes you can spend more time looking for a scene that you like than you actually spend watching it. And it can feel like a never-ending black hole of cliches, bad scripts, and plastic leather sofas. If you want to try something new with relatable storylines, realistic situations of very hot sex, and cinematic quality, then you need to check out the new LustCinema.com. Founded by Erica Lust, Lust Cinema is her new U.S. porn studio for lovers of cinema and sex.
On Lust Cinema, you'll find original series and feature films shot by Erica herself and other U.S.-based female directors, as well as a huge catalog of content from other adult filmmakers. If you already know Erica Lust, then you know that she makes beautiful cinematic porn on X Confessions. So expect nothing less on her new Lust Cinema. You'll experience the whole feeling of sex, the passion and the pleasure. And on Lust Cinema, everyone's pleasure is equally important. Hear, hear to that. Erica wants Sex Out Loud listeners to experience her world of lust, so she's giving you a one-month membership for just $5. Visit www.lustcinema.com/Tristan to get your $5 month and start streaming now. That's lustcinema.com/Tristan. Lust Cinema. Great porn, better sex.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. My guest tonight is Tristan Reese, who is a Portland-based trans educator. He also works at Family Equality Council, which is supports LGBTQ plus families. And we've been hearing both his personal story of becoming a parent and also some of the science-y nerd stuff that he knows, because he's sort of at ground zero for queer parenting. So you said before the break, I have a complicated relationship with my body, and I wondered if you'd like to expand on that.
Sure. I mean, I thought that I did when I said sure, and now I'm not sure what to say.
Okay. No, I didn't mean to like ambush you there. And I don't mean to imply also that we all have complicated relationships with our bodies. So I also don't want to ask this question and frame it because you're a trans person, like tell me about your body because you're a trans person, which is a problematic dynamic that develops. So I'm only asking you to share as much as you want.
Of course, of course. And, you know, I've put myself in this position where I want people to ask me so that they don't have to ask other people, you know, who haven't consented to being part of the public discourse. So yes, totally fine. It's complicated because, I mean, I feel so comfortable and confident in who I am now. And I think sometimes when you're at the end of a journey, it's hard to even remember that you were ever on a journey, or it's hard to remember what the beginning of the journey was. So it's definitely true that when I was initially coming out, and I've only ever been interested and attracted to men. And so when I was coming out and I was in this weird period where definitely straight men weren't interested in me, and nor was I particularly interested in them, but gay men didn't see me as a man. You know, I remember many years of feeling extremely conflicted. You know, I definitely tried to like work out and get more, you know, sort of like traditionally masculine looking. And that's just like not my body. And that's just like not my personality. So, yeah, there were many years when I tried to be different. But, you know, now on the other side of that, I guess that's what I mean is, you know, by complicated, which is just that I have the memory of wishing that my body were different. But it's just not my experience now. And as my body changed and grew through the pregnancy, you know, because I'm such a science nerd, I never thought about it like, oh my God, my boobs are getting bigger like a woman's would. I really was just like, whoa, this is so cool. The veins and the nerves are making these new connections. And, you know, this is the week when the fetus will get fingerprints. This is the week when the fetus can hear sounds that it will remember after it's born. You know, just like all the cool things that my body was doing to create a human, that's just kind of like where I stayed, and not thinking about it as like a gender thing.
Oh, that makes sense. No, that totally makes sense. But it's interesting too to think about then parenting styles, right? So I don't know if I've told this story before, but I haven't told it to you. which is, I know this couple and they're super progressive. They, there is a cis man and a cis woman, and they're just crunchy and granola and just really forward thinking. And so when they had kids, I made some assumptions about like the division of labor and how they might go about co-parenting. And they fell into these traps almost immediately of like the dad sort of not being around and the mom doing working full time and then doing laundry, cleaning, cooking.
And staying up all night to nurse.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. So I was a little bit like, I was shocked as I witnessed it. And because I was close to them, I was, you know, a little bit in it. And I was a little bit like, how did this happen? You don't even have traditional genders, the two of you. You're not like the most heteronormative people I've met. So how did this happen? And so I'm wondering how you negotiate with another man on parenting. And if you have like sat down consciously and said like, here's the labor we're going to divide, or how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that all the time, mostly from my straight woman friends who are like, yeah, I thought we were feminists and here I am. You know, he's just like, well, since I'm not breastfeeding, I guess I don't have to get up at night. You know, I think one of the good things about the way that we did things, as complicated as it was, is that we had already had years of practice negotiating co-parenting. You know, we already had two kids. So regardless of who had the, you know, biological experience of birthing, you know, we knew what we were each good at. And I know when the two big kids came to live with us at first, we were like full on equity, you know, so it is like, okay, you get up 3 days a week, you know, you get up early with the kids 3 days a week, I'll get up four, then we'll switch off. And, you know, we tried to do things like with perfect equality. And then we realized that that was stupid because we're not robots. You know, there are things that he is good at. There are things that I am good at. I'm horrible if I do not get enough sleep. He's horrible if he has to stay up late. So I was like, great, I'll sleep in the morning and then you're off the clock at like 9 and I'll take care of everything else. I'll do bedtime, I'll do baths, I'll do teeth brushing, I'll do story. So we've just sort of figured out in our groove, what are we each good at or what do we each hate the least? Mm-hmm. He hates laundry. So I'm like, cool, I'll just do the laundry. You know, and so we had already had years of experience of divvying those things up. I also, because I'm friends with so many women, especially like straight cisgender women, I was terrified because I work full time and Biff stays home with the kids. I was terrified of being that dude, of being the dude who like comes home from work and like expects a beer and food on the table. Mm-hmm. So I work my ass off every day to be like, what can I do to help? I finish working and then I come home and then I'm like, great, how can I help? What do you need? And I really encourage him. I'm like, well, what do you want to do? You know, do you want to go to the gym this week? Do you want to have like a date night with your friends? Like, what do you want to do to get some time away from the house? So I really try my best to, you know, to not fall into those tropes, because I think it's embarrassing that men do that. And I'll be damned if I am the type of man who does that. And that's such a like a flip on its head, because I'm the one who carried. But
well, exactly, right?
Who stays home.
Right.
Yes. So it is like a kind
of
toxic.
You're the birth parent. And so you sort of, yeah.
But in a way, I don't know. Like, yes, I gave birth to him and it's great that I have a nurturer in my relationship, you know, because Biff is used to being the frontline parent. He's used to being like the first one who's like on the scene when things happen, because he's with the kids all day, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was great. I got to sleep and heal after giving birth. I didn't have to bear that extra burden of like also now being expected to like pick up where I left off with the laundry. No, you know, And so it ended up working out really, really well for us, even though it's, you know, not exactly traditional.
Right. But who at this point, traditional is not that functional. I mean, if we're going back to traditional, you know, gender roles
today.
Yeah,
you just shared a story about your super woke friends who still managed to like fall into these like 1950s tropes.
Yeah. And I think I read somewhere that Biff identifies sort of with mothering qualities. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I would say, you know, Biff has always identified as a femme man. And, And, you know, I mean, now it's like, I think you are probably maybe just a little bit older than me, but we're still in the same like generation where even like Biff has said to me, like, I think I'm actually non-binary. And like we didn't really have that as much. I had genderqueer. Certainly he didn't. He's just a few years behind me. And so you are just a femme man. That's what you were if you were somewhere in between. And so I think part of his femininity is he does feel more like a mother. He does, you know, he really would, if you asked, like you could not call him a father. That would gross him out. I'm not allowed to call him my husband because that grosses him out.
Oh,
yeah.
No, this is really interesting stuff about gender.
Yeah.
So, okay. So he has a complicated gender too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would say my gender is actually much less complicated. I am a man who happened to have had a baby. That's literally it. But yeah, he feels more like a mother. And I would say I definitely, if we're talking about sort of more of the stereotypical things, you know, I do feel, I guess, a little bit more of the father role, but we try not to go too deep into those norms.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the next thing I want to talk about. We have to take a break so this is for you to ponder on the break, is just the idea that we still have this language, right, of mother and father, which is sort of universally accepted and used. And so even when two women have a baby, it's like, oh, okay, so you have two moms, right? You know, we've all seen that children's book. So I guess my question is, are we going to start to see new language emerge, or are we going to see mothering and fathering completely ungendered? I don't think that's a word. Degendered? It's probably not a word either, but you people know what I mean. Like, are we going to see that extricated from right now where it is right alongside gender, right? Are we going to see those two things become separate in the future? So ponder that, and we will be back right after this.
Sounds good.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Happy New Year from the Pleasure Chest. January is full of amazing pleasure ed classes, including in Los Angeles, January 22nd, Big Sex, Body Positive Sex to Empower Your Sex Life with Elle Chase. January 25th, Asian Femmes Speak Out, a panel on sexuality and stereotypes. In New York, on the Upper East Side, January 15th is a squirt shop, and January 29th is a class on pegging. At the West Village location, January 16th is Asking For It. In Chicago, January 8th, it's Suck It, Lick It, Love It, all about oral sex, and January 15th, BDSM Basics. Plus, from January 14th to the 20th, there's an early bird Valentine's Day special. You can get 20% off most popular couples' toys. Some exclusions apply, online only. Beginning January 17th through February 11th, purchase any WeVibe and get a WeVibe toy bag gift in store and online. As always, go to pleasurechest.com for these deals, to find out about events, and to get yourself something special while you're there.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Have you written down the phone number so that you can call me whenever you want? Have you committed it to memory? Here it is again. 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. The first show of the year, here we are, and it's the Tristan and Tristan show. Pretty cool. And we're talking all about LGBTQ+ families. So before the break, Tristan, I gave you this little thing to chew on, which is, are we going to see the roles of mother and father? Are we going to have new names for parenting? that are going to be gender neutral? Or are we going to see the roles of mother and father be extricated from gender, which right now they are very wrapped up in gender?
Oh, man. This is like an impossible question to answer. I'm so sorry, but like I'm a cynic. I just don't see gender going anywhere anytime soon. I don't see the roles of mother and father going anywhere anytime soon. I think they're going to stick around. Am I interested in sort of, you know, getting rid of gender entirely. No, people can do what they want. I don't care. But what I do hope is that there is just an expansion, you know, a broadening, I guess, so that people like Biff can be sort of seen and honored in that more maternal type of role. But also so that men like me, who are dads but who can give birth or who in other ways embody characteristics or qualities that aren't always seen as being the part of the more masculine parental figure. That's really what I want. And lots of space for the people in between. You know, we're seeing more and more like names for parents who are non-binary or just don't feel like a mom or a dad. Those like carry a weight with them. They're not interested in, you know, bringing along with them into parenthood. And we'll also say, you know, we're just like our kids are at a normal public school out here in Portland, not like any kind of fancy hippie school thing. We are the only or close to the only LGBT family that is there. And the teachers were great through my whole pregnancy. They're great with the kids having two dads. All of the other parents have been really lovely. One of the parents, I think when our pregnancy hit the like mainstream newspapers or whatever, she like sent home a little baby shower gift with her son, and then sent us a text saying how much she appreciated that we told our story publicly because it gave her an opportunity to talk to her kids about all different kinds of families and all different kinds of boys. And so it was just a lot of that. I mean, as much as I try not to get into the stereotypes about Portland, it was incredible. There was so much support for us here and so much willingness from these, cishet parents, not LGBTQ parents, to really embrace this new model that they hadn't seen before. And so that's sort of what gives me a little bit of hope that things are going to expand. But as far as mother and father, the words or the ideas, no, they're sticking around.
I mean, of my closest friends that I know with kids, every single one has a parent who, at least one parent, who's trans, gender nonconforming, non-binary, et cetera. And I just know a lot of people who identify as dad or father who are not cis men. And that includes butch women.
Yeah.
What ripple effect do you think that will have for people in the future? Like, do you think everyone will get with the program and say, moms can be and do all of this and dads can be and do all of this?
I don't know. Again, like, I'm super jaded. You know, I do a lot of work in conservative communities. And I love that your life is the kind of life where of all the parents you know, half of them are trans. I'm like, that sounds super fun. Can I come to those parties? Because that is not my life.
Okay.
I'm often the person that gets called in to the super conservative school district when there's been a problem with a trans youth, for example. Mm. Or working with the fertility clinic has gotten in a little bit of hot water because their forms still say husband and wife on them or whatever. So I try not to overestimate how far I think people can come and even where they are right now. But the ripple effect that I really hope is that as more men like me step into the dad space, that we will impact the dads that are there. You know, let's model doing the damn dishes and doing the laundry and carrying the emotional labor of sitting on the phone with the insurance company to figure out why they haven't added the kids to the dental when they said that they were going to 6 weeks ago and now open enrollment is over. You know, like those kinds of emotional labor pieces. I think when men and other dads, you know, whether they're butch women or not, you know, I think that when we step into the dad space and we're showing men like, dude, there's a better way to do this, that I think that sort of like lifts all of them up and encourages them to do better. At least I hope so.
But how do you explain, or have you explained, or have your kids asked, how is it that dad had me groomy in his body, when everything I've heard at school, everything I've seen in books, my rudimentary sex education has been babies come from women.
Well, the baby that I had is only two.
Okay.
So we're still in daddy, dada, want cereal stage.
Right.
And the big kids, you know, especially my daughter, Haley, she's a great example. We told the kids, when we told the kids I was pregnant, we said, you get to decide who you tell and how you tell this story. And literally the next day, our nine-year-old went to her second grade class. She was seven at the time and said, my dad is pregnant. He's going to have a baby. The kids were like, this is so cool. You're going to be a big sister. Oh, that's amazing. Where's the baby going to sleep? What are they going to name the baby? Do you get to pick the name? Like, it was awesome. And she came home that day and was like, oh my God, the kids were so happy. And we're like, that's amazing. And then the next day she came home from school and she was like, oh, all the kids in my class told me that I was a liar because their parents told them a man can't have a baby.
Right.
And so I think that's just like the perfect example of the ways in which kids' realities is so different from adults' realities. But because she's having to navigate that even now at such a young age, she's like, yeah, but their parents are wrong. You know, so like even though she's seven,
she is
empowered enough and audacious enough, it's just her personality, to know that like, but I am her dad and I am pregnant, and so they're wrong, you know? And so I think that they've figured that out in their own ways, and we give them those tools as well.
I mean, I did see a video of you two answering like fan and follower questions.
Is he the best?
And wow. I mean, yeah, she's quite well-spoken and self-possessed for someone so young. And she also is sort of adamant about what she believes.
Yeah.
So I could totally see her being like, you're all wrong. I'm right. End of discussion.
For better or worse. She is
for
very
better or for worse. Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, once it sort of like leaves the space of kids who I think do have more flexibility, fluidity, and even imagination, then you get the pushback from this sort of other group of people who are like, no, no, it's this way. Have you gotten like hate mail since there's been press about your relationship? Have negative things happen to you?
Oh yeah, it's been horrible. And in retrospect, you know, sometimes people ask me like, are you glad you told your story? And you know, that has a super complicated answer too, you know, because on the one hand, I just watched a video last week of a trans guy in Oakland who gave birth, and I actually talked to him over Skype to just give him some support throughout the process. And, you know, he told me that it was seeing my story that inspired him to understand that he could do this too. He could be a parent, he could give birth. And so watching this video of him with his baby, I was like, oh my God, like, in some tiny way, I did that. Like, I made that happen by being bold and being brave and being honest and being willing to tell my story.
And being visible as a role model. If you don't see anyone who looks like you,
how would you ever know?
How would you know? Right.
But the flip side is, you know, just like brutal, brutal, brutal transphobia. I mean, brutal, horrific. Emails, direct messages, social media comments. I mean, brutal. And so you kind of have to balance those two pieces of, you know, it's like the best time to be trans person on the internet, and it is also the worst time to be a trans person on the internet. So I continue to try and balance that every single day.
Well, thank you so much for being so honest and just sharing your story, not just with me, but obviously the whole world knows your story because there's been a lot of media coverage. But I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to meet you after being such a big fan for so long. So yeah, I really appreciate it, Tristan.
Tristan's website is tristanreese.com, TristanReese.com. You can also follow the family adventures at BiffandI, all spelled out, .com. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Biff and I, B-I-F-F and I, the letter I. Thank you for everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Andrew, my new engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. My guest is going to be Dr. Robin Henderson Espinoza. You may remember them because they've been a guest on the show, and we are going to talk about their new book, Activist Theology. So until then, you can get me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino and take some time to talk about sex and gender and parenting out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.